This is Inman's Real Estate Radio, where we go behind the scenes with the industry's movers and shakers to learn what's next for real estate. For more insight, news, and analysis, visit Inman.com. Here's your host, Bernice Ross.
Hello, this is Bernice Ross of RealEstateCoach.com, and I'm really excited to welcome Steve Cook. He is the editor and founder of Real Estate Economy Watch, and Steve is with us today with his economic update for the third quarter of 2016. Steve, thank you for being with us today.
Great to be with you, Bernice.
Thank you. Now, tell me, first of all, what is your outlook for third quarter 2016 in terms of what we can expect in the number of sales that we're going to see?
You know, I think that we're going to see record sales by the end of the year, no matter what happens. And we've had just tremendous sales through the first two quarters. Right now, through May, we're up well over $5 million on the year, and we'll probably continue strong. But the outlook is that we're going to see some moderating in sales in the third quarter for a couple of reasons. One is that we've seen chronic inventory problems continue at the mid to lower tier levels and in a lot of markets that is deterring people from buying. And the other part of that equation is that the lower inventories have artificially pushed prices up as well. So, you know, at the one hand, we're seeing strong prices, but one of the consequences of that is it's more expensive, particularly for your mid to lower tier buyer to buy that home. We'll probably see some moderating in sales in the quarter to come. Some of the forecasters, Fannie Mae, for example, and some of the others have lowered their projections for the year as a result. But it'll still be a good quarter for sales.
Now, Steve, there's been a lot of talk about bubbles in the market, especially in some of the big markets like Seattle and California, different parts of the country. You're saying that some of these bubble alarms are not accurate. What is a bubble alarm, and how is this playing out right now?
Well, there's no doubt that we've been seeing some bubbles in the very hottest markets. But one of the way that most economists have been looking at whether or not a market is in a bubble is comparing median prices with median incomes in that market. And, you know, there's some recent research that's come out that suggests that's just too simplistic, that in fact there are a couple of factors that actually help buyers buy homes for more than their income would allow. And one of the most important is, in fact, the mortgage interest deduction, which allows people to deduct the cost of the interest off their federal and state taxes. And that is an incentive to buy, and it actually helps people buy homes at a price that they might not be able to afford otherwise. This study showed that in the United States, the average mortgage interest deduction is worth about 17% by increasing the ability to buy a home or the ability to pay for the mortgage for the average buyer who's buying a home with a mortgage. The other factor that's helping people to buy homes beyond what their income might suggest is what we're seeing with interest rates today. We're seeing interest rates at record low levels. And many of the calculations, the relationship of income and the price, are not accounting for that. This study suggests that the lowering interest rates by 1% increases your ability to pay by 7%. So if you add the 7% to the 17% from the mortgage interest deduction, you're looking at about a 24 to 25% increase in a person's ability to buy a home due to these factors that really have nothing to do with their income. And that's something that these folks who put out alarms on saying a market is a bubble or not don't take into account in their calculations.
Now, Steve, I've been hearing that because interest rates are so low that it really doesn't make that much of a difference. And you disagreed with that statement. Could you explain why?
Well, first of all, we're talking about ability to buy a home. And when people are buying a home, they're looking at the full value of the interest deduction over 30 years. Obviously, that's greater when you're beginning to buy than it is when you're halfway through, because when you have a full 30 years to look at, you in the first 15 years, you're paying more interest than your principal. But when you're looking at the question you're looking at for the average homeowner today, is the mortgage interest deduction worth as much as people say? Well, it isn't with many people who already are 15 years or longer into the mortgage. They're going to be getting a much smaller mortgage interest deduction than they would otherwise.
Steve, it strikes me that the areas where there are bubbles, these areas are much more expensive. They have higher mortgage deductions. And also, I think we're seeing boomers are kind of downsizing, so they're getting new mortgages too. Could you say a little bit more about what you think is going on?
Well, you know, another factor in terms of the mortgage interest deduction is refinancing. When you refinance, you begin over again. And we have seen just dramatic dramatic, record numbers of refinancing in the last few years because of the decline in interest rates. And also the decline in interest rates has helped increase people's ability to buy homes, which is another factor, as I say, that's not being factored into the folks who just compare simple median incomes with median prices. So there's no doubt that we'd have bubbles in some very hot markets. And there's no doubt that there are areas in this country that where prices, where houses are being sold at prices that probably are higher than the local economy can account for currently. So this study suggests that a lot of the calculations are overemphasizing the extent to which we have overpriced homes in various markets and the number of markets where that exists. And in fact, if we start looking at it in a little more sophisticated way in terms of some of the other things that are out there that help people to afford homes, particularly lower interest rates and particularly the mortgage interest deduction, we will see that, you know, we're not in such a dire situation as some people suggest.
Steve, shifting gears here, you were telling me that there are a number of new down payment loan products out there. Could you explain to our listeners what some of those products are and what to expect?
You know, it wasn't so long ago that people said you have to have 20% down to buy a house. Now, anybody in the real estate business knows that's a little outdated. Really, but, you know, if we want to talk about 20%, a 20% figure, we're really talking about the requirement to get mortgage insurance and pay that as part of your monthly payments. That's a separate issue. But when it comes to down payments, of course, we always have had FHA, you know, doing 3.5%, and we've always had the programs under VA and the USDA, some of which actually have loans at 0%. Plus, there are about 2,200 different state and local down payment assistance programs out there that are financed by local and state housing agencies, which are also providing low down payments. Often they're income tested, but they do also require mortgage insurance. But those are available and a very big part of the answer for first time buyers. But in addition, in the recent months, first of all, we saw Fannie and Freddie both come out with low 3% down programs last year, which allows home buyers to get in, particularly first time home buyers in the case of Freddie, to get into the market at a 3% down payment. And now we're seeing some conventional lenders, lenders like Wells Fargo, Bank of America, BB&T, and some other banks who are also introducing their own low down payment programs. These new programs simply provide home buyers another option. So today you have a number of choices if you're interested in a low down payment. Now, again, you've got to add the cost of the mortgage insurance in that equation. But particularly for a first time buyer trying to get into home ownership, the diversity and choice in low down payment programs out there is we haven't seen in a very long time, and in fact, it's a big factor today in getting people into homes.
Here's a note for our listeners. If you have first-time buyers, visit downpaymentresource.com. They aggregate a number of the low down payment programs all in one place, so that's a good place to check to find some of these products that Steve is describing. Steve, you know, we've been talking about first-time buyers and purchasing properties, and we know that the millennials are really having a challenge. Do you believe it's due to what you call the double whammy of prices and weak credit? Could you elaborate on that, please?
CoreLogic, the mortgage analytics firm, has recently come out with a really interesting analysis that compared the millennial generation, folks aged 18 to 34, with older generations, the boomers, the silent generation, Generation Y, whatever, in years past. And they looked at their credit and they looked at their debt-to-income ratios, and they found that the particular millennial generation actually has lower scores in those critical areas for getting a mortgage than all of the previous generations, going back to people born in the 1920s. And in fact, the millennials are the largest generation in our history ever. That our largest generation also has credit problems that exceed any previous generation in modern times. What does that mean? That means that, you know, they've had problems with student loan debt. That's one that we're obviously very aware of. But also problems with income level. The Great Recession and a lot of other issues related to that made it difficult for younger people to be making the same amount of money or to even be employed compared to other generations. So these factors combined have resulted in lower FICO scores, in higher debt levels, which in itself is a challenge. Then you add to that the situation in the marketplace today where you're just not seeing inventories at a mid to lower tier price range available to these first-time buyers. In fact, you're seeing prices soar in a lot of those markets, in a lot of those price ranges, particularly in markets that are medium to hot. So the choice of properties available that's affordable for a first-time buyer are probably slimmer than we've seen in a very long time. We're seeing multi-bid situations in a lot of markets. We're seeing prices in those tiers soar at double-digit rates. And then you see the credit problems they have. About the only thing going in their favor is, in fact, the lower interest rates. And that's a reason that a lot of these younger buyers do want to get in the market now, because they know that in time rates will rise.
Steve, one of the issues that is contributing to this problem is the shortage of new homes. And I was surprised when you told me we were prepping for this call, is that you told me builders are cranking out more homes than they have in almost a decade at a record rate of 620,000, but they're not actually building a whole lot of new homes. Could you elaborate on that, please?
We're seeing new home construction at a level we haven't seen since 2008. This year, we're looking at something like 620,000 or more new homes coming onto the market. It's taken the builders a few years to get up to this kind of maximum production. Many builders were devastated. Builders were really devastated by the housing recession. Thousands of them went out of business, particularly your smaller local builders. A lot of them lost their credit, and they were not able to continue in the business. And finally, many builders had to sell off the lots and land that they had acquired for future construction in order to stay afloat. So it's kind of like, you know, eating the seed corn, if you will, and if you were a farmer. So finally, we're seeing the construction that we've been hoping for, but a lot of that construction is not in the lower tier markets where the demand is greatest, but it's in the mid to higher levels, because that's where it's a lot easier to make a profit. The median price of new homes is about 10% higher than it was a year ago. Right now it's in the 320,000 range, which is significantly above the median of an existing home, which is probably around 250,000 on a national average. So you're seeing more construction at the higher levels, and it's as a result, we're not seeing the construction at the lower levels that would help solve the chronic inventory shortages that we've been seeing around the country.
Now, Steve, you mentioned that another issue here is labor shortages as well.
That's true. There have been labor shortages in a lot of the trades, again, as a result of the fact that because we didn't have any construction of any note, I mean, at the time of the crash, I mean, as I say, the builders were just devastated, and many of them went under, and with that cost a lot of jobs. And a lot of the tradespeople went into renovation, but the renovation business did not pick up at that time either. It picked up earlier than new home construction. So a lot of builders, in fact, were able to get by in the renovation part of the business as compared to the new homes part of the business. So that did bring some new jobs, but as a result today we see some shortages because we haven't had young people going into some of the trades that the builders need. We've seen workers leave those trades for other lines of work because they couldn't find work, you know, 2007, 2008, 2009, during that period.
See, so in terms of builders, do you see this explosion of new houses continuing through the end of the year and into 2017?
Yes, I do. I think that we'll definitely see it going through the balance of the year and into next year. Earlier this year, there was some problems getting homes sold at the mid to higher levels. That's not happening right now. We're seeing demand for those too. A lot of move up buyers are buying new homes more than we saw before. So builders are doing well. In fact, they're doing really well in a lot of markets, particularly in the stronger markets around the country in the West and Southwest and Midwest. But in the longer term, no, we're probably not going to see construction continue at that level.
Bottom line, what's the overall look for 2016?
We're looking at home sales as a whole somewhere between 4% and 5%, which is very healthy. Prices have been higher than that. In fact, price increases are higher right now than they were projected by all the economists at the end of the year. And that's, again, resulting more of the fact that there's inventory shortages than improvement in the economy. That's not necessarily a healthy thing. But we are seeing prices probably will continue pretty strong for the balance of the year. When prices do this well through the buying season, there's some drop off as we get into the fall, but we probably won't see, again, because of the shortage of inventory, we probably won't see anything that'll hurt our prices. So we're going to see prices, I don't know, in the 6 to 7% range, even perhaps by the end of the year. So we're gonna have the best year probably than we've seen in a decade. This is gonna be a 4-star year in terms of both sales and prices.
No, that goes along with the old adage that election years are always good.
Yeah, I wonder how we did that. That would make an interesting study. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, we've been visiting with Steve Cook. He's the editor and founder of Real Estate Economy Watch, and he's been with us to share his economic update for third quarter 2016. Steve, thank you for being with us today.
Always a pleasure, Bernice.
This is Bernice Ross, and thank you for joining us for Inman Real Estate Radio. Be sure to tune in next Thursday when we'll be back with the industry's movers and shakers to learn what's next for real estate. For more insight, news, and analysis, visit Inman.com. Make it a great day.